Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Dave Damaschek in today's show, filling in for Bald Brian. Bald Brian is always missed, but Sheck always seems to bring the funny. And he's like that old seasoning stuff, accent. Doesn't really taste like anything, but brings out the funny in others. Make sure and tell Dave I called him accent. My grandma would sprinkle it on stuff. It brought out the funny. It was just MSG, but it brought out the funny in others. And that's what Sheck does. He's my accent. So first I'll tell you about Dos Equis. And now a word from Martellus Bennett, a professor at the Dos Equis College Football College.
Hey, college football fans. Martellus Bennett here. Do you want to win every football argument this season? Dominate every debate? Become a pigskin prodigy? Then enroll in a Dos Equis College Football College, where you'll learn from football insiders like me, Jay Cutler, Katie Nolan, and Arthur John Bacon, the man who wrote the book on college football. So be the first in your family to earn a football watching certificate from a beer school. Enroll in Dos Equis College Football College at dosequis.com/edu.
Finally, there's a football beer school for me. Thanks, Martellus. How about it, Dawson?
Enjoy Dos Equis responsibly. Imported by Cervezas Mexicanas, Wine Plains, New York. Copyright 2019. Dos Equis Beer Brands, official beer sponsor of the college football playoff.
You're rocking with the Toolbox, the station that feels like vacation. Inside another free ride, be sure to tune in this evening for the Van Halen Vault. Every weeknight at 6, from 1984 to OU812, we got an hour of Sam and Dave, brought to you by Guitar Center. Get to Guitar Center now for overpriced gear and employees with attitudes. It's their annual, it's still way too expensive, and I can't find a place to park sale. Going on now at Guitar Center. We got traffic and weather together, sunny skies in the Southland. While the rest of the country freezes, we got 74 degrees. It's nice, but we are running out of water. Right now, be caller 105 and you'll win lunch for two at Outback Steakhouse. Outback, now serving kangaroo. Cuckoo Kachoo, music from Rick Derringer, Jethro Tull, and the Lovin' Spoonful next hour. Got just enough time to tell you that this set of the hits is brought to you by Bed Bath & Beyond. Go beyond the bed and the bath. That's right, check out the hallway. Tomorrow's another Two for Tuesday, double shots of that classic rock all day, baby. Here's a band that we won't play on Two for Tuesday, because they only got one song. It's like they said, hey, if we only get one song, let's really make it count. Let's also give ourselves a really dumb name, like Sugarloaf on the Toolbox.
Green-eyed lady, lovely lady, strolling slowly towards the sun. Green-eyed lady, ocean lady.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, the author of The Case for Impeachment, Alan Lichtman. With Gina Grad on news, and Dave Damaschek's here for Good Sports. And now, that guy from Netflix, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on a mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Dave Damaschek.
What's happening, Ace? What's happening, Grad? What's happening, everybody back there behind the glass? I wore this T-shirt in your honor, Ace.
It's, man, show.
Look at this. This
We're
is a genuine article.
Yeah,
got it back in about the turn of the millennium.
Layer upon layer with you today. Got an ACS jacket.
I'll tell you what happened to Brian in a sec. He's at Disneyland.
Nothing
I'll
happened
tell you that.
To Brian.
Nothing happened to Brian. Man, one of the best toolbox talk-ups ever, Dawson. That was
Thank you.
Spot on. Bang on. And the Sam and Dave reference, very nice, because they were soul band from the 60s, and then you got Sammy Hagar and Dave. Good stuff, man.
Thank you.
All right. So, and by the way, kids, that's reps. You don't do that without reps. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to, like, they want to go to broadcasting college and stuff like that. That doesn't mean anything. You
that
have
was,
to have
yeah,
reps.
Just in case, because I can imagine there's some vapid cynics out there thinking, like, well, how many times did he get a shot at that? He did that clean. We just watched him right through the glass.
One time.
One take.
T-bones. It also, Sugar Meatloaf makes me think, Ace, and Gina, were band names better back? Because everybody makes fun of band names. That was like a Bill Cosby thing in when he with Heathcliff Huxtable coming up with the worst band names possible, and that was a big punchline for him. Are they worse now or back in the 20th century?
That was always that. We were talking sitcom tropes the other day with Jeff Garland. We were talking about souffle humor. Which reminds me, Maxipata, I got a bunch of texts saying there was a souffle humor joke on Modern Family, which you should have brought up to me.
I just found out last night.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, that is now before last night?
Or it
did
is,
now,
yeah.
Last night happen?
I should have brought it up to you.
Yeah, it starts with the word last.
I know.
That was
a mistake.
But do a more of a time machine thing where you go, I just found out tonight. And then I'll go, okay, well, there's no way. Then this is on me.
I can't argue with that.
But I found out a lot of things last night, and they're written down in front of me.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So there was, is it true, Great Magnet, that we were talking about souffle humor, and we did 15 minutes on souffle humor, and Modern Family did a souffle humor joke? I will let you look that up, but that may be Great Magnet stuff.
Right.
Now, band names, so all the tropes. Souffle humor was one of those, I'll have a double, make mine a double, hobo dumping out booze. That was all 60s into 70s stuff. Into the 80s were band names. So,
yes.
Like, the kid would come in and they'd go, you're going to go see the evil doers or something. They go like, ugh, or whatever. They've got some, or, you know, snot boogers or whatever it is. They have some weird, gross, stupid. It was a punk rock thing.
Jason Bateman was in a great show that didn't last very long off of his Silver Spoon success. He then was spun off into It's Your Move, which was a very funny apartment-based show for a while. And there was one episode, perhaps the most famous of them all, The Dregs of Humanity. They went to see The Dregs of Humanity play a show. Mm.
That was it. That was the
Dregs of
80s
Humanity.
Sort of punk version of when Alice would try to hip it up when Greg was turning into a hippie, and she'd go, far up? And everyone would start laughing.
Grousy?
You're right, right. We got so much mileage out of the same stupid joke.
There was also a lot of amnesia going on. A lot of getting bonked on the head and then forgetting who you were, but then getting bonked on the head towards the very end of the episode and restoring.
Resetting.
Yeah. All Gilligan needs is a second coconut to hit him in the head, and he'll regain his memory. I wonder if some of the fellas in the NFL, especially interior linemen, enjoy that episode. The good news is they could watch it every day for the rest of their lives and not remember they saw it the day before.
Miles Garrett, we need you over here. Clonk us with a coconut. I heard it. I saw it on TV. It's got to be true.
Modern Family ran a souffle humor bit in their episode The Evening. But before that afternoon,
we were
taping the show doing 20 minutes on souffle humor, and it's gone the way of the dodo. Okay. Netflix. So I got a bunch of stuff to talk about with Netflix. First, I want to say I had a – all right. Here's my whole thing. Everything in life. You know, it's like I would say to Dr. Drew all the time, you know – some guy call in. Say, like, I got a problem with my drinking. You know, I may be an alcoholic. And then I'd say, how much do you drink? You know, how many beers a day, or how much vodka, or how much are you drinking? And Drew would always say, it's not how much, it's how does it affect you? Are you getting into trouble at work? Is a relationship suffering? Have you gotten DUIs? You know, like what's it? You can't really quantify the amount because some people can drink a large amount, but they do it at night and they don't beat their wife and they stay out of trouble and whatever. So it's like, and then it's those kind of moments, you know, the breaking the kid's piggy bank so he can get the fifth of vermouth or whatever. And they see yourself in the mirror. You're drinking a nail polish cleaner, you know, or whatever, remover. And, you know, those kind of moments. And I always say cities have those kind of like gut check moments as well. Like Los Angeles, when they start putting the razor wire around the freeway signs, that was like a time to go take a look in the mirror and maybe go into some sort of city rehab. Like, what have we become? We're putting razor wire like they have at Guantanamo Bay. We're putting that around signs over the freeway.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we started putting the placard in front of firehouses saying, drop your kid here, just no questions asked. Just dump them. We won't ask.
Safe surrender.
Safe. Don't put them in the dumpster or Cuisinart. Just drop them here. Drop them here. Do the right thing. Obviously, the right thing would be raising your own child. But anyway, just dump them here. And then little things like, you know, the free breakfast and the free lunch we have at school. What are these kids going to do during the summertime? We got to extend this into the summer. Like little balloons, little trial balloons or little weather balloons that go up. And we should know this is a bad sign for society.
You always talk about the person at work who behaves consistently like enough of a pain in the ass kook that then it establishes the standard for that person. Like, well, that's just Grant being Grant. What are you going to do?
Right.
Perhaps society is now Grant.
Yeah.
All of society is now so crazy and insane. It's like, well, we just got to barbed wire everything. What are we going to do?
Yeah, with the lock up, the spray paint, put everything in a locked cabinet.
Plastic bottles at baseball games.
Right, throwing them on the field. So I'm driving into Kevin and Bean early this morning, and I see something on the way in, and I see something on the way out. On the way in, I'm going down Mid-Wilshire. They're at Mid-Wilshire. They're at our old studio. I'm heading down Wilshire. On the way in, of course, I see the meter maid writing the ticket to the loan car. Prius parked on the one side. But as I turn to the right, see the other side is where the subway off-ramp is.
Okay.
And there are 5 kiosks set up with beach umbrellas and food and chopping up fruit and moving stuff around and selling food, essentially, drink and fruit and ghetto dogs and everything else. And I thought, well, first off, these guys have no license, pay no taxes, and there's no health. Joel Grover's not giving them a letter grade on the food cart. That's a shopping cart with a propane tank in it, and this guy's cooking over there. Now, the other side of the street, they're giving a ticket to a taxpayer. That's awesome. These guys are just flying under the radar, doing whatever they want.
In plain sight.
With food.
Yeah.
With food, I can't do any building on a property I own without pulling a permit and going through that whole rigmarole, which is hell on wheels. But these guys are handing out food, or they're selling food. No problemo. Okay, bad sign for a city as we head in. On the way out from Kevin and Bean, of course, I hit the Waze. I got to get from where I live, Mid-Wilshire, to where I live. That's just a winding road of side streets and Dodger stadiums and underpasses and everything. I see this sight. Somebody in the homeless encampment, at some point, I think it's around Silver Lake when you're heading under the freeway, they've now started to build out. It's no longer the, you know, lean-to.
Oh, two levels?
It is. They're using plywood and oriented strand board, and they're using the freeway pylons as basically their main pilasters. You know, like, here's our corners. Now we just have to get some sheetrock in between here. They're building. They're building structures. I can't build a structure. I have to go pull a permit, show up my checkbook, jump through 1,000 rings. They're now building out on what was the sidewalk. I don't know how you could walk past it. You have to go in the street. Your kid must walk in the street. And then I see this. And this probably indicative of the times we're living in, but as bad as the barbed wire on the freeway. As I pass by one of the shantytown structures, I see that the fella has mounted one of those plastic owls on top of it to keep the pigeons away.
To keep the riffraff away?
This is what seafood restaurants used to put up so the seagulls wouldn't shit all over the sign. This guy, I mean, he's going, I don't know, lawn jockeys, fountains, like what's next?
Flamingos.
What's next here?
White picket fence, yeah.
Yeah. This is going to be like the Ring doorbell where it's like, I'd like to walk down the sidewalk. This guy's checking me on his app. Hey, buddy, what are you doing here? Walking. Oh, you're too close to the owl. There's an owl. There must be pigeons that hang out under the overpass. Uh-huh. They must shit on top of his roof. And now he has adorned it with an owl.
mailbox out front.
Ed McMahon with a giant foam core check was standing out there. Like, we're there.
He needs that for the roof.
And we have the seasons are now upon us about. Some Christmas lights might be nice. Some of those icicle ones.
Jehovah's Witness pulling up on a bicycle wants to share the good news. They are building. They're now physically building structures where the sidewalk used to be.
It is striking the number, as you say, the number of people gathered in those in the underpass is it really is a note in the last 6 months or year, right?
I've said, like, when I was growing up, there was something called curb appeal. It's literally curb appeal now.
Curb.
This guy's a fancy new tent with an owl on it, and he's got some nice CDX plywood exterior going, and it's literally curb appeal.
New
is what
HGTV
he's got going.
Show.
Yeah.
Curb appeal. So, Netflix, I could probably when I'm on my deathbed, I will realize that I had probably between 7 and 9 years of insane conversations I should have never had with another human being. But I was sitting with Nate Adams in the afternoon. And now, just to jump ahead, Shelby American, the latest doc, is on Netflix currently. The 24-Hour War is currently on Netflix as well. And he said to me, hey, good news. Netflix is going to kick back the airing of the Shelby doc until the day before Thanksgiving. And that'll give us a few more days to send people to Chassis, Chassy, and him download it. But you can get the Blu-ray. It's got a bunch of extras. Really cool extras. Footage never seen before. Shelby Racing from the 50s. But anyway, and others as well that we were able to get our hands on that no one's ever seen. But so go there and get the Blu-ray and get the Blu-ray of the 24-Hour War, which has a bunch of extra stuff on it, too. But Nate says, good news. It's not coming out for like 4 or 5 days and no problemo. And I said, good. We'll get a few more downloads. And that was at 5 in the afternoon. And then the following morning, I got up at 6. I did Kevin and Bean. I came home at 8:30, opened my computer, got a tweet, watching your show, watching the Shelby doc on Netflix. And I was like, all right, it's on Netflix. I don't mind. But why do we have these conversations only to have this happen 9 hours later? And why does it happen so often? Why is this a regular part of life?
And it's a volunteered piece of information.
Yes. Talk to the guy from Netflix. He says not airing until Thanksgiving. Okay. 9 hours later, it's on Netflix. Why does that work on either side?
Yeah. I don't know.
I feel like there's a lot of
it
that.
It is. I know I bring this up. I feel like every time we sit that the 21st century is defined by narcissism. Everybody has to be essential, and you make yourself essential by telling something to somebody to clarify something, oftentimes even though you're completely wrong about it.
Yes.
It's vexing for me when it's specific to, say, football. I said the other day something about, like, oh, that game in 1979 in the divisional round, Gifford Nielsen upset the Chargers in San Diego. It was a huge upset. Like, and I got on social media, somebody hit me up to let me know, Dave, sorry, Dan Pastorini was the quarterback of the Oilers that year. Like, do you think I stumbled into saying Gifford Nielsen? He filled in for Dan Pastorini, who was hurt. Why would I say it? Why would you drop me that line? Why did you just waste my time reading that?
As a wise man once said, in your rush to correct me, you didn't check to see if you were right or not.
Yes.
Crazy.
So So an interesting thing. I think you guys will enjoy. We have a little sound clip. So there was an interesting thing. So in the 24-Hour War, there's Ken Miles. Ken Miles is played by Christian Bale now. Ken Miles was a side mouth talker. I mean, literally, like, talked out of the side of one mouth. Side of his mouth. It's weird that Christian Bale didn't. That thing. But what I want you guys to focus on is civility. Because nowadays, Well, you know, look no further than Myles Garrett going El Kabong on the quarterback. Like, that's the new wave order. Mm-hmm. It's like, and it, fuck that douche. And a lot of guys like cussing and yell, calling out other guys and talk, you know, everyone's just talking shit nonstop. And it's not just in sports. It's everywhere. This is a race. The Triple Crown of endurance racing is Sebring, 12 hours of Sebring in Florida, 24 hours of Daytona, and then it's not in this order, by the way, and then it's Le Mans, 24 hours of Le Mans. Dan Gurney, sorry, I was looking at another, there's another Dan I want to bring up, but Dan Gurney was ahead in the race. His car just like broke down, and Ken Miles won. First, I just want you to listen on how this is one of the biggest races here. It's a 12-hour race. The guy broke down at the very end and didn't win. So you can hear what the guy broke down sounds like, which is Dan Gurney. Because nowadays, you'd just be blaming everyone and screaming at everybody and saying he used a racial epithet. But here we go. And then listen to Ken Miles in his victory speech.
It looked like Dan was going to win until the last lap, and it puked.
Gurney is actually pushing car number two in, and that means Ken Miles has crossed the finish line first.
Ken was a lap down at that point. He had to circle Sebring one more time before he actually won the race. Dan hadn't touched the car, just left it where it was. He would have finished second. Because he started to push it, it was all over. He got disqualified.
And obviously elated but surprised, Miles enjoys the victory lane hubbub, while everyone wonders what happened to Gurney.
That's Gurney.
Engine trouble?
I believe so.
Hmm. How long did you push it?
Oh, probably almost a quarter mile.
Ken Miles, are you as surprised as we are?
I'm slightly ashamed.
Slightly ashamed.
Well, it was a big day for Ford, wasn't it?
It was a good day for Ford. I'm very happy with the Ford Motor Company. I'm very sorry indeed for Dan. He really deserved to win the race. He drove a beautiful race, and I'm sorry that something happened to the last minute.
How did Lloyd go for you? This is your third big long-distance win together, isn't it?
I like Lloyd.
What's next for you?
Le Mans.
Le Mans next. All right, so one guy's...
That was his victory
The one guy
speech.
Ran 12 hours and then pushed his car for a quarter mile, and he's like, well, she broke. And what's that? I pushed it. Probably about a quarter mile. That guy just got done losing. That guy was two laps up. And
me
one of the
pushing
biggest
a quarter
races.
Mile. The crew should push it a quarter mile.
So that guy, the other guy, felt slightly ashamed.
Yeah.
And he really feels that Dan ran a great race and deserved to win. He was happy for Ford, but feels ashamed. Okay. I don't know if you'd hear that anymore.
It's a bygone era.
You guys, by the way, guys tackle a guy and hold him to a 2-yard gain and are thumping their chest and running toward the end zone to pose in the end zone. Like, it's insane where we've gone. The other part that's eerie and bizarre and weird about that whole thing is Ken Miles gets the win because something happens to Dan at the very end of the race as Dan's car breaks down, something he can't control. He wins. And now he's won. You know, he was behind until the very last lap, and now he's won. So he wins Sebring. He won Daytona. He's going to be the first guy to win the Triple Crown if he can win at Le Mans. And now he goes to Le Mans, and now he's leading the whole race. And the deuce, Henry Ford II, tells him to slow it down so we could get a photo finish, everyone going across at the same time. And he gets gypped out of that win. And comes in second.
Because of that instruction?
Yes, because really? Of that wow. instruction. He gets jobbed out of that win, and he comes in second. So he pulls this thing, this victory, out of the jaws of defeat in Sebring. And then the very next endurance race, he gets jobbed completely, comes in second. Then he goes testing at Riverside 6 weeks later and dies. That's Ken Miles. Then I started thinking about, Dan Weldon. Well, are we calling Alan, or is he calling us? Oh, he's calling us. Oh, tell me when he calls then. Dan Weldon is a guy who... All right. So then I start thinking about J.R. Hildebrand. J.R. Hildebrand is a rookie. He's running Indy. He's in first as a rookie, 2011. He's winning the entire race. He comes to the last corner He's 1,000 feet away of the Indy 500 winning as a rookie. We can hear it, I think, Max Zapata.
Oh, I remember this.
Yeah.
J.R. Hildebrand. There's more traffic. He's got to get around the lap traffic. 100 years
now. Oh.
He hit the wall. Oh, just like my Tommy Schenker.
Keep just your like foot Zenigas. On the gas.
Hey,
Dan Weldon is going to win.
He slides across the finish line, still finished like fourth, sliding the last 1,000 feet. Hit the wall for no reason at all.
My goodness.
And Dan Weldon, and everyone's going nuts. Everyone, of course, Dan Weldon, you're never going to, the guy coming out of the last turn with 1,000 feet to go is going to win the Indy 500. He doesn't hit debris or traffic, mm-hmm. He just hits the wall. And of course, Dan Weldon is going insane behind him. Never going to beat him, but it sees him hit the wall. Everyone is celebrating. Everyone's going nuts. 4 months later, Dan Weldon is dead.
Is that
right? At Vegas.
I don't remember that.
Yes.
God.
Dan Weldon, fatal Indy accident. So it's a weird life where it's like you're celebrating, you're winning at Sebring, then you get jobbed at Le Mans, and then you're dead, testing for, you know, next year's Le Mans. And Dan Weldon, 1 minute, you won the Indy 500 of a fluke, and 4 months later, dead.
Wow, crazy. That's crazy. What do you think about when you talk about sportsmanship and so on? I think actually the overcorrection in the kind of 180 degrees from what you're talking about is, I think it's too much the jersey swap after the game. Do that in the bowels of the stadium.
Yeah.
I don't want you guys being pally. That's not, I'm Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson, cut that crap out.
I was watching Brady, like, walking, you know, on NFL Tonight or whatever, this, you know, showing footage, and Brady's running in. Half the dudes on the Eagles are hugging it out with him before the game. Could you imagine?
No, I don't.
Joe Green hanging around with the aforementioned Dante Pastorini.
How about it? Very nice recall there.
Howard Cosell.
He introduced the flak jacket. Remember that? But anyway.
Can you imagine those guys hanging out?
No, because of course, WWE, we need to inject a little bit of that. I don't mean they have to be unpleasant to each other, but when they're playing, be unpleasant to one another. But after the game, the jersey swap and jazz. I went at the last Super Bowl, I went around with a Steelers jersey wearing Damashek on the back and tried to exchange it with a bunch of Patriots. And they actually considered it, really blew my, like, they were like, I don't think I can give you my Super Bowl jersey for them. I'm like, yeah, of course you can't. I'm just a random pot-belly Jew. Of course you're not supposed to be trading your jersey. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
All right, let me ask this. Not a fan of the jersey. I don't like the prayer circle that much.
No, I don't like
much.
That either. Do that hidden away. You're
all right,
not together.
But what if we said this? What if we said you may have your prayer circle, but we're also going to have the atheist get in a circle and shotgun a beer?
It's exactly right. Just always think of what. Okay, extend it to its
the other side of the coin.
I'd hang out and watch that, see who finishes first. You know what I mean? And both players from both teams, and why not coaches
come
as well?
I've talked to a couple.
No
of guys.
Better time to drink a beer. All you're going to do is get on a bus and go to the airport.
I've talked to two professional football players who are now retired, who both claim that they, on more than one occasion, on their way into the stadium, couldn't resist the delicious smells from the tailgating, and they would stop off. They'd have a wiener and a beer with the local fans.
Wow,
how great is that? But it's also funny. You're getting paid a lot of money, man. You sure you should be having that 12-ouncer?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of it. It's not a good job for like a skilled position, wide receiver type thing. If you're a run-stopping nose tackle,
maybe it's helpful. Yeah.
Couldn't hurt.
That's a good band name.
All right.
Run-stopping nose tackle.
Well, we do have Smash Mouth. All right, let me hit Untuck It over here. Holidays are almost here. No better gift for the guys in your life than the stylish shirts that fit just right. Nothing better. Untuck It shirts. Designed to be worn untucked. These shirts are great. It's so true. I hate tucking my shirt in, but then when you hang it out, it looks like it's not tucked in, but these work perfectly. Always fall just to the right length, no matter his size, and it looks casual and sharp at the same time. There's 50 plus fit combinations. Untuck It shirts look great on tall, short, slim, and athletic guys of all ages. And you can find your style online or check out one of their 80 brick and mortar retail locations as well. Visit untuckit.com. Use the code ACS for 20% off at checkout. That's untuckit.com. Use the promo code ACS for 20% off. All right. Max Pat, if you can't get hold of our guest, that's fine. We'll just keep rolling along here.
He's calling right now.
Of course he is.
He's calling. It's always
how it works.
It's always the part where I go, all right, I've emotionally made my peace, and I'm ready to move on to the next chapter, but we'll see. Speaking of docs, so if you guys want to go to Netflix and watch one of my two docs up there, watch it and like give it a thumbs up or something for the next time I try to sell something to Netflix. It'll just help. Let's see. Where's Alan's? What do I do with this page here? Oh, I got it. Sorry. Thanks, Gina. I got it. Alan's on line six. Alan Lickman?
Yes.
Hello. Thank you for calling in.
My pleasure.
Distinguished professor of history at American University in D.C. And the book is The Case for Impeachment. It's available now on Amazon. Bookmark us and click on through. So let's talk about, well, first, let's brag a little about you. You successfully predicted eight of the last nine presidential elections.
Well, I would say all nine, because I did predict Al Gore would win the popular vote in 2000, and he should have won Florida.
Mm-hmm.
The recount was stopped with Bush ahead by 537 votes.
So that would have been 9-9.
It was tremendous voter suppression of the African-American vote.
So you must have predicted Trump's victory.
I did.
Okay, so...
And I got... Imagine not a lot of love for predicting Trump in 2016 here in 90% Democratic Washington, D.C., where I teach at American University.
Well, listen, I hate the Patriots. I still predict they're going to win the Super Bowl. Doesn't make me a Patriot fan. It makes me awake,
right.
And I have brain cells. So I should get credit for that. You should get more credit for predicting someone you don't want to be president or, more importantly, winner of the Super Bowl when you predict it.
There you go. Much more important.
I'm always
trying to convince people, and it's hard, of two things. One, these are predictions, as you say, not endorsements. Two, that the hardest thing in being a good forecaster is not knowing math, you got to know that, not knowing history and politics, although you got to know that. The hardest thing is keeping your own political preferences out of it. Otherwise, you're worthless half the time.
Right. You have to sort of divorce yourself from your own feelings, which we're having a very difficult time doing in this day and age. I thought the computer was going to clear up a lot of this stuff. It's gotten a lot worse. So the case for impeachment, let's talk about that. So what I always hear is,
yes,
if he's impeached, he's still not going to get impeached once it goes to the House or Senate. I can't remember which one.
Senate.
Once it goes to the Senate, then who cares? Because they're never going to get the votes. What do you say to that?
Yeah. Several things. First of all, a few months ago, I would have said the chances of the Senate convicting Trump, no matter what the House does, because the House just charges with articles of impeachment, Senate's got to convict him by 2/3, I would have said the chances are zero. I think it's still unlikely that the Senate will convict, but I don't think the chances are quite zero. The reason is one of the Lickman rules of politics that I talk about in my book way back then, The Case for Impeachment, is that for incumbent office holders like Republican senators, their top priority, maybe their only priority, is survival. And if they think Trump is going to bring them down, they would be willing to turn against him. Look, I've read an article where one insider said if the senators can vote in secret, they would vote to boot Donald Trump because they'd rather see Mike Pence, a reliable, down-the-pipe, conservative Republican, as president rather than the loose cannon Donald Trump. In addition, whether it convicts or not, the trial in the Senate is of critical importance for public opinion. At the trial, the Democrats can appoint prosecutors who can make opening and closing statements, call witnesses, present documents, cross-examine the president's witnesses. The president would have to present real arguments if he chose to mount a defense, not just disparaging tweets or Rudy Giuliani-style television spin. The truth is, no president who's been impeached, even though there's been no one convicted in the Senate, or resigned to avoid impeachment, has ever seen their party win the next presidential election. Andrew Johnson, who was impeached, by the way, in the election year of 1868, was a Democrat who Lincoln put on his ticket in 1864 as part of his new Unity Party. Well, his Democrats lost in 1868. Richard Nixon's Republicans lost in 1976. And Bill Clinton's Democrats lost in 2000, an election without the cloud of scandal that they should have easily won at a time of peace, prosperity, domestic and foreign tranquility.
So let me float this equivalent notion maybe and tell me what you think. I think sometimes the reason the polling is off, at least maybe last time around with Trump, is people don't admit they're going to vote for him. They go, oh, I'm going to vote for Hillary or I'm not voting. And then they go behind the curtain and they vote for Trump. And you're saying that, the senators would do that if they could do it being anonymous, but they can't. Is that sort of an equivalent?
That's what I've heard. I mean, that's not coming from me. I don't know these senators well enough, but that's been reported in the news. That's right. If they could go into some kind of quiet, concealed polling booth, they might vote differently.
It's funny. Trump's a lot
here's
like
the thing
porn,
about current politics.
Yes. Yes.
Trump has shattered everything conservatives have ever stood for. Respect for longstanding institutions. Personal morality, personal responsibility, limited government, fiscal responsibility, states' rights, all gone under Donald Trump. So what's left? Donald Trump. And so Republicans fear if you wipe Donald Trump out of the equation, there's not much left for the Republican Party to fall back on.
What's your prediction for 2020?
How much are you paying me for that one?
I'm
not ready to make a prediction yet.
You're not. Who do you like?
Too much.
Who do you like on the Democratic side that you saw up at the debates? And who do you think may enter toward the end, if anyone?
You know, I'm looking for a charismatic candidate because that's the only thing that matters on my system of 13 keys. Issues, ideology, totally non-predictive. You know, Hillary Clinton was way more centrist than Donald Trump, and she still lost. Everybody said in 1980 Ronald Reagan couldn't win because he was too right-wing. He won by a landslide. So forget all that. The only thing that matters is do we have an inspirational candidate like a Reagan on the Republican side or an Obama in 2008? I do not see that yet. And so I still think the field is open. Who knows?
Yeah,
Obama. I have no idea.
Everything is just about who you want to have a beer with or who you wouldn't mind sitting, watching your kids while you're out
at
the movie.
What a standard.
It's a weird standard, but
applied.
We're human beings and we're animals. And all we do is kind of go, I like that guy or I don't like that guy. It's my Matthew McConaughey versus Katy Perry theory. Matthew McConaughey looks smart. I like that guy. He's thinking about something. Look at Katy Perry. Look at her. She's dumb. She's not thinking about anything. I have no idea what they're thinking. But the point is we would elect Matthew McConaughey just driving a Lincoln and thinking. He wouldn't even have to give speeches. He wouldn't have to do the debate. Someone would accuse him of being a racist or being in Putin's back pocket, and he'd just be driving that Lincoln thinking. We go, look at that guy. He knows.
He's driving the car named after our favorite president.
Electability.
Right. Yeah, we need that person.
I always tell people, vote for who you believe in. Don't vote for who Lichtman thinks is electable or you think is electable or Nancy Pelosi think is electable. That's a trap. Look, the Democrats thought they had nominated eminently electable, experienced, proven candidates with Mike Dukakis in 88, Al Gore in 2000, John Kerry in 2004, Hillary Clinton in 2016. And what do they all have in common? They all lost.
Well, let me float this theory and tell me what you think, because I think it'll dovetail with yours. Every single movie that has the president that sort of aw shucks guy comes out of nowhere, somehow runs for president, they always do it, and it always works because he's a regular guy and he talks like a regular guy. But it, we got Trump. So what I'm saying is that guy's Kevin Costner in the movie, and he's a sweet guy who just he's sort of aw shucks politics. Like, well, I just want to put people to work and pay a little less in taxes, everyone, and becomes this big thing. We kind of got the bizarre version of that in Trump. It wasn't the one we'd been looking at in movies. Could there be a Democrat who outdoes Trump, but in a Democratic way? Like the charismatic Kevin Costner from the 90s shows up and he's going to out-regular Trump. You know what I mean? Like, we're voting for Trump because he's not one of those Washington politicians. And we went, you know, Michelle Obama. Oh, shucks. Here she is. Well, that, she's regular in a different way. Is that a possibility?
Yeah, I think Michelle Obama could do it. And I'd love to see her get into this race. You're absolutely right. You know, Trump comes off at, you know, this regular guy billionaire with who has his private jets and his, you know, half a dozen golf clubs. I don't think this time it would be hard to up him on that.
No.
Is there a drop dead date that you cannot enter, though? Because with Bloomberg, the registration or whatever the term is to be on certain ballots has come and gone already. So could Michelle Obama decide, like, ah, it's New Year's Eve, big surprise, everybody, I'm in. Would she be able to?
Absolutely. There's no drop-dead date for the Democratic nomination until their convention in July. There are drop-dead dates for the primaries, but we have had candidates nominated before, not recently, who competed in no primaries. After the assassination of Robert Kennedy in 1968, Hubert Humphrey, who had entered no primaries, became the nominee. Those are under a slightly different system where not every state held primaries. But if nobody becomes the consensus candidate and they can't bargain among themselves, you could have a candidate swoop in as late as the convention in July and become the compromise candidate because other candidates could turn their delegates over to that person. So absolutely, Michelle Obama could sweep in as late as July and become the nominee.
Now you sound like Lynette, my wife. We just got into this. She said the exact same thing verbatim. Yeah. And Michelle can win because ladies like her arms.
Oh, she has great arms.
She has great arms. So McConaughey's thinking, and she's got great arms.
She really does.
Alan Lichtman, the case for impeachment. Is it true that you're 72 years young?
That is correct. Born in 1947, I even remember Eisenhower. And by the way, in the case for impeachment, I make the point, you know, I'm not making the case on policy grounds. There are plenty of presidents I've disagreed with on policy grounds, but I've never suggested their impeachment before.
It's funny that you're 72 and you sound like you're 38, and Dave Damashek over here sounded like he was in his 60s when he was 23.
What did I fire?
You're an old soul.
Oh, okay.
Alan, thanks for calling
in. You know the secret?
Yes. What?
The secret for staying young in old age?
Mm.
Vigorous aerobic exercise. I don't care what you do. Doing 20 minutes or a half hour is 80% of the balance. 80% better than doing nothing. The other 20% to be a competitive runner like I've been is really, really hard. But just doing something regularly is 80% of the battle and will keep you young.
Just keep moving.
I'd like to do a segment with Alan going forward called Old School, Old School.
Yes.
You know? Like, you know, usually it's the hip. Just he and I will debate things and agree.
Speaking of the secret, what about Oprah?
Oprah says she's not interested.
Yeah, I don't know her secrets.
She's not Oprah.
But I'll tell you one other little secret. Jerry Nadler. Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, was my high school debate partner at Stuyvesant High School in 1963.
Hide the cupcakes. Nadler's coming. Did Nadler lose 800 pounds?
He did.
He did.
I could picture Nadler at 17 coming by, like, lock up the cabinets. Here comes Nadler. The good news is it's going to take him 20 minutes to walk up the driveway. Did he have his stomach stapled or something? He literally lost
something like that. I'm no doctor, but he had some kind of procedure, and he really needed it. He wasn't heeding my advice about, you know,
getting on the cross country team with you. He was running to the Wendy's.
I was on the cross country team in college. He did not follow my lead.
He was more shot put or throw the disc.
Competitive eating team. Yeah,
I didn't do that at 143 pounds.
Thanks, Alan. We appreciate it. The case for impeachment available.
Great time. Take care, guys. Bye bye.
On Amazon. Hey, you know, I got to tell you, there's something, you know, my thing all the time when I go, mean people start to look mean and racist people start to look like racist. And even like gay guys start to look gay afterwards, like stuff you've been thinking. You do like a flash dance style 20 minutes of exercise every single day and you never miss a day. When will you start getting old?
Well,
you know what I mean? Like, how does that work? Like, Alan sounded, that's a 72-year-old guy.
Spry.
And he sounded really young. And I thought, you know, maybe he'd say something like, I'm a small guy or I've always had a high voice or whatever. It's definitely because of his exercise routine. If this guy was carrying around extra 40 pounds and smoking, we would not hear it, wouldn't come across this way, right?
Nadler, though, conversely, he's one of those people who lost a lot of weight, and then when you see him in his previous incarnation, you realize, like, it's the Drew Carey syndrome. Some people look better, Zoftig, you know? Like,
yes.
Hey, Nadler, great effort, but you know what? I like you better with a little plumped up. Gain it back.
Yeah,
a little heft.
I agree. It's also, you guys tell me this, because I had a friend who had the stomach staple thing. He was always a big guy, and when you're a big guy, that's half of your personality. Like it's the jokes about big guys and like a big and like self deprecating stuff and all that kind of stuff. I hadn't seen him for a couple of years. Had the stuff dropped, you know, 170 pounds. Saw him, and it was jarring to me. Like I needed to sit down. Everything I knew about him was a lie.
Yeah.
It was all
Kimmel.
Based on him being a big guy. All right, we got the Rotten Tomatoes game to play. Nadler, I mean, he's got to be down 150 pounds.
Yeah, it's like in the last 15, 20 years, too. If you see him fairly recently in the last impeachment stuff or whatever, yeah, it's
If the tale of two impeachments, if you see him Clinton impeachment, he is massive. And if you see him with the Trump impeachment, he's no longer that. He was 338 before surgery, and he didn't seem 6'4". He seems like 5'10".
Oh yeah,
to
he
me.
Seems
that's,
little. Yeah.
That is a lot of weight on a figure out his height.
I'm going to predict he's 5'7" because yeah, he's not a
that
tall guy.
Can't be that short.
Stout.
338. If you're well under,
guess
six.
Who's 5'6"? Nick Saban, the head coach of the Alabama Crimson Tide. I think that's amazing too. 5'6".
Everywhere.
Speaking
saying,
of sounding like Lynette,
I'm seeing 5'3" everywhere.
Whoa! No.
Listen, if your last digit, if your number, if your inch ends with a 3, it starts with a 5 and ends with a 3, and then at some point the scale starts with a 3, that's bad times.
Yeah.
You've not been doing it right.
You're wider than you are tall.
You are 5'3", 340 pounds?
How does that work?
That is really, really fat. That's crazy to be 5'3", 338.
It's got to be weird, too, like when he's, you know, whatever. Many years ago, he's representing the district in Florida or whatever, and he's like, I have some decisions I've made. You've made decisions? You.
For the good of
you,
exactly.
You're making decisions?
Remember Mark Mangino, the coach for Kansas? I mean, he was like a 400-pound guy. Like, hey, you guys, we're going to bust your tail this training camp. Get you ready for week one. Like, do we have to listen to you, man? Isn't there anybody else who could deliver this message besides you?
When he gets animated.
Oh, my God. Look at the picture.
When he gets animated, he spits out one of those mini donut gems, you know, when he really gets moving.
Tries to blow in the whistle. Too much powdered sugar for it to work.
Powdered sugar comes out of the whistle. Wow. We're looking at Nadler. We're looking at Nadler at the height of his powers at at 340 pounds and 5'3". I mean, it was in terms of wider than you are tall. Yeah, there's an argument for that.
That's a man of actual intellectual or charismatic substance, because legitimately, if you're 5'3", most politicians are tall. Then on top of it, he's a short guy and he's 340 pounds. His message must have been pretty powerful.
This is my whole argument for Quiznos hiring Jared from Subway when he gets out of prison. Like, yeah. You know we're good. You know we're good. We have to be good. Who else would hire a convicted pedophile? No other standard. That's how good our meat is. That's how good Nadler's ideas were, because tall guys can't even – there's no CEO of a Fortune 500 company that's under 6 foot. Like, they do these studies, and they won't even – as a society won't accept a male in a position of power who's short, diminutive, or whatever. We like our tall Dan Gurney types.
You made a great point many moons ago when Rick Solomon and the sex tape with Paris Hilton came out. You said, wait, this same guy was also with, I forget the celebrity women he was with, and that's exactly the same sort of dynamic going on there. You made the point like, yeah, once it gets out that, he was with her? I don't know. I got to give him a try.
He's updated that reference since. Now it's Pete Davidson.
Oh, right. There you go. That's another good one. That's an outrage.
Please, can everyone just apologize to me? Because when Pete Davidson got dumped by Ariana Grande, he's really down in the dumps. He ate half a tub of Haagen-Dazs today. He hasn't left his apartment in 3 days. I was like, oh, poor Pete. I screamed from the mountaintops. Oh, no. I know chicks. Chicks are dumb. He's going to have a whole bunch of hot chicks wanting to fuck him because he was fucking Ariana Grande. Mm-hmm. That's how the system works. Find his list. Who he's on to now, Cindy Crawford's daughter.
Yep.
Who looks like
Is that true?
Yeah,
she's a 19-year-old, slightly better version of Cindy Crawford.
He's run the rainbow of vagine. Because he was with Kate Beckinsale, yep. Who's like a 40-something-year-old beauty.
The Ariana Grande thing, he had to lick his wounds for about 3 days, and then he just went on a poon streak, the likes we've never seen in 10 lifetimes. So, and I yelled, don't feel sorry for that idiot.
You were right.
By the way, the least funny cast member of SNL. Okay. You got to figure out this. Yeah.
I have, other than Cindy Crawford's daughter, Margaret Qualley from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Kate Beckinsale's on there. I'm sorry.
She's the barefoot hippie girl who puts her feet up on the dash with Brad Pitt.
This ain't taken place over the last 7 years. This is 7 months. Like, Jesus Christ. And look, Cindy Crawford is she was the best looking 19-year-old on the planet. Then the real Cindy Crawford gets together with Gerber, who is a I'll say this. When you see the Casamigos one and you go, which one's the movie star? Is it that guy or that guy? Most people would point to Randy Gerber.
Over Clooney.
Over George Clooney. Those two, their sperm and their egg met. And then from her loins sprang, what the hell's her name? Cindy Crawford Jr.
Kaya Gerber.
Now we have the hottest 19-year-old on the planet.
Yeah.
That's it.
There she is.
That's it.
Yoy. She does look like a younger Cindy Crawford is a good description of her.
Jesus Christ.
And before that, Ariana Grande and Cassie David.
Wasn't one of them Andy McDowell's daughter?
Yes.
I think so. That's Margaret Qualley.
Oh, okay.
What year? When did he break up with Ariana Grande? And, if Ariana Grande was smart, she'd be accepting bids to have sex with her. And then dump the guy. Do it very publicly. Like, that's what I like. I'd like to approach Ariana and go, look, we don't have to have sex. I get it. You're well out of my pay grade. I need you to dump me publicly.
So you want her
really publicly dump me?
Yeah.
So you want her to go full Can't Buy Me Love?
Yeah.
For just, Patrick Dempsey's
I
day.
Dump. I've dismissed Adam Carolla. Do it like Christmas morning. I did it Christmas morning. He'd come down the stairs to tell me that they'd found cancer in his pancreas, and I dumped him. And then...
World's your oyster.
The world's my oyster. Line it up, bitches. That's the way it's going to work, because that's the way women roll.
When people ask about why you broke up, is there some sort of vague backstory, what happened there? It was too... You know what? It was too passionate. It was too...
Too
much choked up.
I loved her enough for both of us, and that was too much. She said I was smothering her.
They ended their engagement October of last year.
October of last year.
God,
so it's been
about
a little over a year.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, this is odd because I do have some Pete Davidson relationship news and some Ariana Grande news today. Mm. And I never have either of those.
You know, it's funny. This is what I suffered from. Chicks are always like, you know, the greatest aphrodisiac is a sense of humor. But they could never, they were like having Jack Silver as a fucking program director. They couldn't tell what a good sense of humor was.
That's what I've always said. Everybody thinks. Everybody will tell you terrible things about themselves. They will say, I'm not the best looking person in the world. They'll say, I know I'm not the brightest bulb around. Boy, you're much nicer than I am.
Get these
but no
drops.
One will ever concede that they have a bad sense of humor. Everybody no. thinks, whether they think they're funny themselves, everybody thinks they get the joke.
Well, they do. They do.
Nobody will
time.
Ever admit that.
I like to laugh like everyone. I have a great sense of humor. I like seeing comedy. I'm saying that wasn't funny. Then when they're talking about an offensive joke, like they always do that thing where they go, right. I'm telling you, it wasn't funny. All right. Should we do, you want to take a break and do Rotten Tomatoes?
Yes.
Find pictures of all the women Pete Davidson is dated in a year's time. Jesus Christ.
I hope in the meantime, Ariana Grande has taken another lover.
Oh,
I don't know if
see.
She's down on her luck.
She has a new man on her Instagram page. I'll just leave it at that.
Let's see if she could dump me like this via tweet. Tell her, give her like eight grand. I'll give her $8,000 if she literally just says, I'm now parting with Adam Carolla. I'm dumping him.
This time I mean it. It's over, Adam.
Just maybe tell her I'll go as high as. No, don't tell her 12, but negotiate.
Cushion
but stop
12.
At 12. Stop at 12. Jesus Christ. Oh, we're going to revisit Women Who Won't Sleep With Me with the voting?
Yeah, the voting's going to start next week.
Who are we on? Who's the top five of women least, who would be most nauseated sleeping with me? I'll let you find that. All right, we'll take a quick. Now, again, these aren't women I want to sleep with, although I probably would. These are women who would most be disgusted, as voted by the listeners, having sex with me.
This is a tremendous feature.
Let's say a quick break. We'll come back and do Rotten Tomatoes game right after this.
The holidays are around the corner. It's time to drink too much, eat too much, and fight about Trump at the dinner table. Luckily, we've got just what you need to make the most of this most wonderful time of the year. Introducing the Corolla Christmas Stocking. The custom embroidered stocking is adorned with the hand-knit word, acehole, sewed on by talented elves and or children from the Orient. What's inside? Glad you asked. With your purchase of the Corolla Christmas Stocking, you'll get an ACS Nativity Scene t-shirt featuring Max Apata as baby Jesus and Adam as Mother Mary, a custom Happy Birthday Jesus ornament, 4 Corolla Drinks wine glasses, plus 2 bottles of your choice, all for only $99. And for those who want to go big for the holiday season, you can also purchase the Stocking Scrapbook Combo for only $175. Get the stocking and the 10 years of ACS scrapbook, signed by the entire network for the ultimate Corolla fan in your life. So get to CorollaDrinks.com today and get ready. The holidays are coming. It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Adam. 3 things in a row that just made me think of you. 1, got a chicken shit ticket for parking outside of the restaurant I was picking up a catering order from. Goddamn chicken shit tickets. 2nd thing that happened, I'm driving right after I dropped off the order, driving down the road. It's a beautiful day, especially this time of year on Long Island. 62 degrees out, everybody's got their windows down on the side of the road. Bunch of guys with leaf blowers blowing everything into everybody's car, ruining everybody's day. Well, I thought I had 3 things, but I guess it's only 2. Get it on.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
I was watching TMZ a couple days ago, and they had Cindy Crawford Jr. leaving a bakery buying a cake for Pete's birthday.
Yeah.
Buy him a custom cake for his birthday.
And she's 19.
Models aren't supposed to go cake shopping for you. First off, they have no business in a bakery. That's like Count Dracula going to a garlic festival.
Where'd you get that one from?
Just made it up.
I think I heard that one on the Smothers Brothers round about 67.
Dawson's delighted with that one. Anyway, I was gonna say it's like Count Dracula going to a garlic shop, but I realized there's no garlic shops in the middle of that. So I said
the festival is in Gilroy.
Right. That's right.
Yeah, it's great.
Maybe it's because I'm not around Ariana Grande and Pete Davidson on a daily basis, but it seems like, to your point, that this has only been 13 months since he got dumped by Ariana Grande. And then, of course, we all went through the national nightmare of his 6-day depression.
Right.
But since then, he's made all sorts of hay. He's run through half of society since then. And how is he having this many relationships with this many public relationships? He's making out with Kate Beckinsale at MSG at a hockey game. And then next thing you know, he's getting a cake from Cindy Crawford's daughter.
They all begat each other.
Are they overlapping?
All right, listen. Max Bata, reach out to the Grande camp. I want you to just two requests, all right? Offer $8,000 just to send a tweet out dumping me, okay? If she won't take it, send Pete Davidson's camp the same $8,000 offer to smell his dick, okay? Either way, I'm going to be out $8,000, but I'm going to be happy.
Yeah.
Either way.
You're the sniffer.
So what? Oh,
in
yeah.
In the latter scenario.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm making sure.
You have the top five.
Don't get your hopes up, Donovan.
Want to have sex with me?
Yeah, this is from the 2018 list, least likely to sleep with Adam. At number 5, Rachel Maddow. Mm. Number 4, Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah, she made me.
Number 3,
two for two.
Lynette Corolla.
Yeah, oh, she's perennial. That's very sad.
Yeah. Number 2, Alyssa Milano.
Yeah.
And then number 1 by landslide, AOC.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Not a fan. Bad for
Olga.
Career. Bad for image.
Oh, Olga. Oh, are you kidding? Olga'd pay me.
So those are the ladies
oh
that
my
Pete's
God.
Had to run up.
Yeah, we're looking at since Ariana. He's just, they're all slim. They're all hot. They're all everything.
Am I nuts or is the one in the red bikini, isn't that like Larry David's daughter?
Yeah, there was Larry David's daughter.
Wow.
Yeah.
Kidding me. Andy McDowell's daughter, Larry David's daughter, Cindy Crawford's daughter, Kate Beckinsale, and Ariana Grande.
Okay.
Beckinsale is
the least funny cast member on SNL in the last 30 years. All right.
That's become a thing in the 21st century that if you're a male SNL cast member, I think they're all, like it's 100%, they're with with A-list women, right?
Right. Yeah.
They all
are. That's the new thing. All right. Let's play the game. Oh, wait. Dawson, are you playing or are you calling?
I'm calling.
All right.
Sorry. And we got the intro right here.
Flicks, and the gang makes their picks, guessing if it's rotten or fresh.
If they guess it exactly, we'll get a bonus 5.
It's the Rotten Tomatoes game. You know how we do it. Give me the Rotten Tomatoes game. Now it's time to play it.
So with the Thanksgiving holiday a couple of days away, and our thoughts are all about stuffing our faces and watching football, sometimes you have to spend time with the people you can't stand the most. Family. Mm-hmm. We know things can get uncomfortable, so this week we're highlighting movies with awkward family meals.
Mm. Dave, remember your mom kicked my mom's ass on 97.1 Adam Carolla morning show trivia.
Why would I know that? Is what I remember your mother saying.
How would I know that?
How would I know that? Mo Damashek chiming in. I know the answer. She knew information about Carolla that predated me knowing Adam Carolla. She knew about his childhood and everything. It was
the
very
reason my family's horrible is not only did my mom not listen to the show, evidently know nothing about what we were doing, which was broadcast. She was put off and annoyed and turning it back on us. How would I possibly know that? It's like,
Do you have access to the same station everybody else does?
I know you're mean, but do you have to be stupid? Like, it's broadcast. I don't know. When they have Simpsons trivia, how would anyone possibly know that? Well, they ran episodes, and people remember them.
That's Jason Robards at the end of Parenthood says to about Tom Hulse, like, it never ends. He's a grown man with his own child. And does that, you never stop worrying about your children. You always have to be looking out for them.
Except?
I don't know about that, says Mama Carolla.
She was perturbed that she was being asked these questions. But her angle was, how would anyone know?
How could
they?
And,
of course, Dave Damashek's mom would chime in with the answer immediately.
Damashek's mom, Mrs. Damashek, knew Jerron, the intern.
The black intern. Right. Now, so my mom's angle should have been, he's a latchkey kid, and now he's a latchkey adult. Pretty soon, he'll be a latchkey elderly person, and then he'll be a latchkey dead. That's what she should have done. But instead, she kept working this, how could anyone know this angle, which is a bizarre sort of thing, line to connect,
yeah.
Right?
Like, but satisfying in a way that it's your mom, and that's exactly what she would
say. She was on brand.
Mo Damashek will, in fact, periodically, I'd say about once a year, every 18 months or so, ask, like, how's Mike Dawson doing? He was always nice. I always liked him. You know, she can summon anybody from my past and ask after them if she liked them. If not, then she's hateful towards them.
I'm doing very well. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll let her know. She's listening right now.
She is.
Yeah. My mom announced after Kimmel hosted the Oscars, it was a little hit and miss. Oh, and I wrote for him. She said two things that were awesome about the Oscars. She said, she said she didn't really watch it. She said she didn't really watch it, and it was a little hit and miss. And I was like, oh, that's two negatives. Like, you didn't watch, and it was bad.
But what you saw, you didn't like.
Yeah, I didn't like what I saw.
That's good.
Sorry.
Well, we are going to let you guys in this Rotten Tomatoes game be flies on the wall to some of these exceptionally awkward interactions. Some good old-fashioned clips. Mm. First, a clip made for radio. What happens when a family meal is interrupted by a blackout?
Because the battery's for a heater.
Oh, just brought up the movie, Parenthood.
Oh, God. Oh, geez. What happened?
Your mouth used up all the power.
Oh. Don't worry, Dad. We can still find the bar.
I'll get a flashlight.
I'll get it, sis.
Mom, Dad, what happened?
Where is it? In the bedroom?
It's in the nightstand.
Mom, getting a flashlight.
What happened?
Oh, good. Okay.
Kevin.
You know I don't like it.
Daddy, this is a blackout. It's a temporary interruption in the electrical supply of the home.
It's okay, honey. Something's busted.
Where's the switch? That doesn't look like my house.
Here, bring it here.
Oh, here it is. What is this?
Oh! Holding a vibrator. What's more on point in the naming?
Mommy, what was that?
That was an electric ear cleaner.
It was kind of big.
It sure was.
That's so great.
What's more on the nose in terms of naming something? Vibrator or toaster oven?
Oh, wow.
They're both bang on, right? Like, yeah. That's what does this thing do? It vibrates.
And that's it.
That's what it does.
Nothing more.
All right.
The movie is 1989's Parenthood.
Hey, can I get a quick clarification? Is this based on critics or audience?
Critics.
At the time where they came down.
Okay. Critics, yes.
I don't think you sufficiently reacted to that.
We did not.
That I mentioned Jason Robards, who's been gone from the planet Earth for, I'm assuming, at least a decade. I mentioned him. And the next
movie.
You basically see is Jason Robards.
Didn't you had
the
no
very
idea.
First one? I had no idea that was coming.
That's incredible. We could live 1,000 lifetimes, and that would never happen again.
Gina, why don't you just go, huh? That's usually the reaction that gets. Can you believe that happened?
That was amazing.
You have to. It has to. You have to. You have to. It has to steep. You have to take that story home and tell somebody.
Okay.
To get the huh.
Do you remember Max Dugan Returns?
Sure, yes. I do.
God, I missed Jason.
Also with. Also with.
Tom Hulse?
No, not with Tom Hulse. The great...
Wiest?
The lady.
Wiest. Diane Wiest.
Yeah, Wiest.
She's great.
She's in that, too.
She's great in this movie. This movie's great.
Mm-hmm.
This movie has just the right amount of sugar and salt, and it brings out the sugar. And it's a very well-done movie.
I agree.
And I've always enjoyed this movie, but where are the critics? And... I'm going to say... All right, everyone locked in?
Yep.
89.
I think this movie's beloved. I think it set a new tone for that kind of modern family. And this was a long time ago. How old is this movie? I said 93.
I've dominated this game in past visits. And the last time, though, I got embarrassed like the Houston Texans going into Baltimore 2 weeks ago. But like the Houston Texans on Thursday Night Football last week, I shall rise like a phoenix. 85.
Parenthood is certified fresh at 91.
All right.
People have it at 76. The audience says it's what are you looking for out of a movie?
It's a perfect movie. It's a great movie.
I have a feeling that there's going to be another movie that I watched last night coming up here. And if it does, I will let you know.
Next up, we got
That may happen if they made T.J. Hooker the movie. But unless they did, then no chance of that happening with
If I watch three episodes, then that counts as a feature.
Listen, Adrian Zmed was working as a male stripper last night's episode of T.J. Hooker, because what they would do every third episode, either the chick, Heather Locklear, or Adrian Zmed had to go undercover.
Yeah, deep cover.
As a stripper. And then we got to watch him dance around in a bathing suit. But it was always a strip club that didn't really exist. It was like, oh, look at her. She's wearing a bathing suit. Yeah, but like, that's it. But the guys are still interested in drinking beer.
In hindsight, that may be the most powerhouse casting crew in the history of TV. You have Locklear and Zmed. And Shatner?
Unbelievable.
Yikes.
Well, talk about powerhouse casting. This next film stars Eddie Murphy, and Larry Miller. 1996 is The Nutty Professor. Play the clip.
Funny movie.
I think I do remember hearing something on TV about colon cleansing. They say everyone should have one. I'm thinking about getting me an appointment and go down and getting my colon cleansed thoroughly.
You want your colon cleaned? Fine, I'm going to clean mine. Yeah, now my colon is clean. I'm talking squeaky clean.
What happened here? You're going to start breaking gas. Break gas and destroy our meal.
Don't tell me to stop. You're the one that brought up colon cleansing and all that mess.
I did not say anything about breaking gas. I said that I was going to get my colon clean.
You can talk about putting a tube in somebody's ass, but I can't break wind.
I didn't say nothing about putting no holes up nobody's ass.
But what do you think of colonic is? You think you run the asshole by the car wash?
He's choking the baby.
As long as I break it, I'll do what I want to do at this table. Case in point.
Who that called my name?
Yeah, I called you up. Your name is.
He's been proud of me.
I love God. That movie. That movie's funny. And the Dave Chappelle stuff is super funny. Women be shopping.
In the, yeah.
Yeah. Love
Comedy
that.
Comedy club.
Yeah. Chappelle is super funny in that.
A lot of pathos.
Good movie. All right. Look. The critics are always uptight with comedies, you know. They're like, oh, it's okay. Like, you know how hard it is to make a comedy that just works, you know, soup to nuts? Like, you buy in early, you're in. You have this crazy scenes at the table at the comedy club. This is a fun, funny movie, and the critics, they should be 89 or 90, but they're not going to be. Because it's farcical, it's big, and there's fart jokes, and they're tough. I've locked it in. It's 77.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I don't know. I really, really don't. But the number that just kept popping into my head, Barely Rotten, 56.
Wow.
It could be low.
Dang. Now maybe I should turn this 81 upside down, and I'll be closer. I'm going to go 81, though.
The Nutty Professor is fresh. That's 64%. Okay.
Just barely.
Sheesh.
By the way, the audience at 44, what did they buy it? When you buy a ticket to The Nutty Professor starring Eddie Murphy.
You got exactly what you thought you were going to get.
You've seen the commercials on TV. Yeah. Otherwise, you wouldn't be buying a ticket. It's not like you're from some other country and you're just driving through America and you see a movie theater and pull over. Who is this? What's going on? Who is this man of color? Let's investigate. You saw commercials for The Nutty Professor. You bought a ticket. You watched the whole movie and then you walked out and went, well under 50%.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Yeah, that one's confusing. And there's been spinoffs.
All right.
Well, it turns out that 1996 was a banner year for cinema. Not just The Nutty Professor, but also this blast from the past.
Alice, what kind of mushrooms did you put in this sauce?
Just the ones you had in your room. I thought you might like them. Oh, some of my mushrooms. Uh-oh.
And they smell pretty tasty.
My room? My mushrooms. Oh,
Donovan
no.
Song.
Roy, is something wrong?
Trippin'.
Roy?
No, it's not a Donovan
is something
song.
Wrong?
I'm tripping with the Bradys.
Big
from 1996. Line. A very Brady sequel.
God, good morning, sunshine. It's one guy's name.
Hmm?
The band. Not band, the artist. Who sings.
You were thinking
good
Donovan.
Good morning, sunshine. Yeah, it's not Donovan. It's
like
one
Dion?
Guy's name. Yeah, it's like Dion, but it's not that.
You mean the song from Hair? Good
yeah,
morning,
Starshine. Sorry. Good morning, Starshine. Yeah.
Oliver.
Okay.
God damn it. It's weird how your brain works, right? You go Donovan because it's one guy named mm-hmm. and it's Oliver. Okay.
So this is the sequel, yeah. Obviously, as the site, as the name of it would indicate.
Brady Bunch. What the fuck? All right. Okay. A curse. A pox on Sherwood Schwartz. That guy, it's hard to tell, like, who's. If there is, and I pray there is, I pray there's a place called Hack Hell. And in it, when I get there, I shall be greeted by Sherwood Schwartz, who's standing next to Sid and Marty Krofft. And we shall now be forced to watch horrible sitcoms for eternity
yeah.
and be tormented by
Gomer Pyle.
Yes, we'll be tormented. That's how it's going to be called Hack Hell. And it's going to be Sid and Marty Krofft and Sherwood Schwartz. And I'll be there, too. It'll be awesome. All right. Chew. I mean, come on. This has to be low. But now
I feel like it was hipster popular, right? When the
maybe
movie
one.
Came out.
But when you do what was the first one? Family? What was the first
the
movie?
The Brady Bunch movie.
I mean the first
oh,
movie
Parenthood.
We did. Parenthood, sorry. When you do Parenthood, you can narrow it down from 85 to 95. Pretty easy. You know it's going to be right in that bracket
yeah.
somewhere. This could be a 55. It could be a 13. I mean, this could be exceptionally low as well.
Dave's scratching out.
You've convinced me.
I don't think it's going to be. It can't be fresh. But, I mean, like you think a bad movie's 51. A bad movie's 10.
Yeah.
As we've learned. And there's some zeros out there. All right, I'm locked in. What do you guys got?
The number that kept jumping out at me because I agree with you, but I think it's on the high side of terrible because of the hipster factor, Dave Damashek. I said 33.
Oh, really? I'm way off, I guess. I go 60 here because of the when the first one came out, I remember a lot of people saying, "Oh, it's fantastic." I have no recollection of there even being a sequel.
I want 22.
A Very Brady sequel is rotten.
Oh, no.
At 53.
Oh,
my goodness. Wow. And the audience at 35.
This is a weird world. Now, normally when you make shitty sequels, the critics have it low and the audience liked it. This is weird. We're living in a weird world where the audience, 35 with the audience, where the audience is going low on all these. But anyway, not that it's a factor. Here we go.
Next up. Who doesn't love a little souffle humor?
Mm.
Here's a painfully awkward dinner during which Robert De Niro connects with Ben Stiller's parents mm-hmm. over a very detailed family photo album.
Oh, don't tell me you kept his umbilical cord?
Of course not. That's Greg's foreskin.
All right, you know what? That's it. That's enough humiliation for them.
We're having fun.
No, we're not having
Why
fun.
Did you do this?
Because we're done.
Into the fondue.
Anyone in the mood for Chinese?
Movie was funny. That
2004,
was the first one.
No.
Meet the Fockers.
Oh,
that was the second out of three, right?
The second.
I thought this movie sucked. I really did. I remember watching it and finding it really obnoxious.
The anti-bald Brian.
The first was funny, right?
Yes.
First one
was
funny.
Great.
Second, yeah.
And then there was Little Fockers.
I think they liked this
It's movie. Just everybody being super big and obnoxious and annoying.
All right. All right, we locked in?
Yeah, I don't like it, though.
Barely rotten at 59.
Mm. I went lower. I would go even lower than I went, but you got Dustin Hoffman and Barbara Streisand added, so you got to give him a bump. I said 41.
It's funny you say that, because my calculation involved the resentment of critics for people like – I like when people get involved in, like, why would Robert De Niro make this movie?
Mm. Right.
Because he's getting paid and he enjoys making movies, and he's on a set for 3 months with Dustin Hoffman and Barbara Streisand. That's why. 51.
Meet the Fockers is rotten. At 39.
Oh, yes.
Boy, I got to tell you, I may be out of this. Is this our last one?
Finally,
mm-hmm.
Adam's favorite dysfunctional family.
Mode is derived from Latin modus. I mean, do our proper measure.
Frank, shut up.
Richard.
Olive, can I tell you a little something about ice cream? Well, ice cream is made from cream, which comes from cow's milk, and cream has a lot of fat in it.
Richard.
What? She's gonna find out anyway, remember?
What? Find out what?
Well, when you eat ice cream, the fat in the ice cream becomes fat in your body.
Richard, I swear to God.
It's true.
What? What's wrong?
Nothing, honey, nothing's wrong. So, if you eat a lot of ice cream, you might become fat, and if you don't, you're gonna stay nice and skinny, sweetie.
Well,
Olive, Richard is an idiot. I like a woman with meat on her bones.
I don't... why is everyone so upset?
No one's upset, honey. I just want you to understand. It's okay to be skinny, and it's okay to be fat if that's what you want to be. Whatever you want, it's okay. Okay, but Olive, let me ask you this. Those women in Miss America, are they skinny or are they fat? Honey?
Well, they're skinny, I guess.
Yeah. Guess they don't eat a lot of ice cream.
This fucking piece of shit. This fucking piece of shit. Not only was an overrated piece of shit with all you fucking hipsters out there, but it ruined society. This is when we turned. You want to know why we're here?
This is it?
Blame Little Miss fucking Sunshine, all you assholes. This is when we jumped the fucking shark. Blame this fucking movie. I'll tell you why. Greg Kinnear is a fucking dad in a very good and traditional way. All he's doing is like working, and all he's doing is talking about like, hey, don't eat ice cream for breakfast. You're going to do Little Miss Sunshine. You shouldn't. It's unhealthy for you. He is the hero of this story. The producers and the director made him into the goat of the story. He's the dad. There's something wrong with him because he's trying to like hustle up work and he's trying to keep his family together, whatever. You got the brother, the gay brother, who tried to slit his wrists, and they're like sitting around the dinner table, and it's just, she's like, what happened to your wrists, Uncle Rob? And he's like, well, when I was done blowing my boyfriend, I decided, and Greg Kinnear's going, I don't think that's acceptable. And I was like, why isn't it acceptable? Let her know. She should know the truth. Fuck you. She's fucking 9. She doesn't need to know about this guy killing himself because the gay partner left him for an author. That's number one. Number two, she's going to a beauty contest. She does need to know about nutrition. She ordered fucking ice cream and pancakes for breakfast, and the fucking sane guy, the same sane guy, thought it would be a bad idea to talk about suicide at the dinner table when they're back in Arizona, also think it's a good idea to talk about eggs and a more nutritious breakfast. And yes, especially and ironically, when you're on the way to a beauty contest. So also, the other guy, the other hero in the movie's the fucking junkie sex offender fucking grandpa who is a fucking junkie, the most inappropriate fucking grandpa in the world. Like, he's in the next room doing a couple of rails. He was thrown out of Shady Acres for being sexually inappropriate with other members of Shady Acres. And now he's been thrown out of multiple old age homes for getting handsy. with women in the fucking home. Yeah. He's a junkie who's a sexual predator, and he's the second here who teaches his daughter to his granddaughter to dance like a fucking whore, and he's the fucking hero. And then the gay guy tried to kill himself. He's the second in the line of hero. And the fucking one sane normal guy in the fucking movie, Greg Kinnear, the dad, he's the villain. He's the Dumbo. He's the buffoon. He's the clod. Now, where are we now in society? We're short on the Kinnears. We got plenty of junkies running around. And this movie caused it all. It got it completely backwards. The chick couldn't dance for shit. She has no talent. That's the other thing. Like, the other chick comes out, she plays a concerto on a Steinway. And the other chick comes out, she's spinning baton and doing the splits. All stuff you have to practice for. Yeah. All stuff you have to dedicate time to. And then this bitch comes out, shakes her ass like she's fucking drunk, stumbling out of a fucking bar. And we're all supposed to start applauding the chick who's put no effort, no time, and has no skill level into her fucking act. This movie's 100% backwards, and it marked the fucking of our society. We jumped the shark with this fucking movie. Jesus goddamn Christ. And everyone was like applauding, like, oh, she's no, she has no talent. And what about the other fucking girls who worked their ass off for the competition? And why, by the way, why bother practicing anything? Why pick up the baton? Why pick up a guitar? Why pick up a cello? It doesn't matter anymore. Why learn to play the harp? You just get out there and stagger around in some sort of flop dance, and then everyone will just start slowly, like, start to slow clap for you. Fuck that. And the fact that Alan Arkin got an Academy Award from fucking being the... He was in half the movie. Well, he was technically dead. It was fucking Weekend at Bernie's with Alan Arkin. He did nothing but be a horrible influence. He was a fucking junkie pervert. Sorry for sounding like the squarest guy on the planet, but this movie fucked our society. It's never been the same since this movie came out.
So is it a 99 or 100?
Best original screenplay. Fuck you. This fucking movie sucked.
For a movie you hate, you sure know a lot about it.
I've seen it 28 times. You know why? Because I keep my friends close, but I keep my enemies close.
No, that's the argument that people mount these days.
What is Greg Kinnear?
Yeah, of course I know about it. I hate it.
What's Greg Kinnear's character? What is it? He thinks it's inappropriate to talk about suicide in front of his 9-year-old at a dinner table. And everyone, the whole movie is everyone looking at him like, oh, God, please shut up. Please stop talking. Please stop talking. And then at the diner, everyone's like, no, please stop. He's telling his daughter not to eat ice cream for breakfast. Is he a bad guy?
Not crazy.
Is that a bad guy?
You're right.
And everyone at the table has to clutch their pearls and go, and also, if you're all so fucking woke and progressive and hip and everything, why is your fucking girl in a beauty contest? What are you doing with this? Why are we even doing this? We should be against the whole notion of people getting up there and dancing around in a bathing suit at age 9. Fuck this. Fuck this movie. And then the worst part ever, the worst part about this goddamn movie is what's his name? Carell. The movie takes place in three places. It takes place in Phoenix. It takes place in, I guess, San Diego, they had to get to. And then it takes place on the road in between. It's a summertime movie. There's a VW bus with no air conditioning. Everybody in the movie is wearing short sleeves because they're in Phoenix and it's summertime and they're getting in a bus with no air conditioning. There is one person that has long sleeve. That's Steve Carell's character. But he's wearing the cuffs like he's a fucking Chippendales dancer because he tried to commit suicide. But he has his sleeves rolled up so everyone could see it. And at some point when he runs into his old boyfriend, and he's ashamed, of course, like, oh, boy, he's going to find out I committed suicide. He has to hide his hands. How about you just roll your sleeve down? You're already wearing long sleeves. If you want to go into a liquor store and not have anyone ask you questions about your attempted suicide, then simply take your cuff and roll it down. Yes?
Yeah.
Jesus fucking Christ. Fuck this movie. And by the way, this movie is like, it doesn't get better with time. It gets shitty with time. Yeah, there. You're standing next to a guy wearing a fucking white t-shirt. Okay.
I can't believe you never even touched on, because there's so many other things. The child who takes the vow of silence.
That
until
fucking
he realizes he's
piece
colorblind.
Of shit pussy. That guy's like, he's taking a vow of silence. Why? He wants to be a Marine aviator. He wants to fly fucking F-16s off a carrier. He won't talk. And he's hey, Dave, I'll be the mute pilot. Ask me what my call sign is.
What's your call sign, Private?
Oh, I'm gonna scratch my nose. Ask me some more questions from the tower, like how many miles I'm out or what my airspeed is.
Vector, what's your mileage to the carrier? You're not safe, Goose. Mm. You're dangerous up there. Mm. True? Mm. You're not playing it safe. You cost Goose's life. Agree? How you doing since Goose passed, by the way? You want to be my wingman someday?
I'm writing on my scratch pad. I'm going to hold it up to the cockpit.
Wait, I'm going to be your wingman?
The guy with
you,
the
mute SOB.
The guy, the fucking spindly goth kid, the kid that looks like he's the fucking fourth Ramone, wants a life in the military. He wants a life in the military. And by the way, no tougher or more rigorous program than being a pilot in the military.
It's going to be eye-opening for this kid based on his backstory.
Unclear why this fucking angry sack of shit is so pissed at his dad the whole time. Like, Greg Kinnear would be like, would you like another drumstick? And he'd be like, it's like, shut the fuck up. What the fuck does that even mean? You want to be in the... He doesn't know he's colorblind. I don't know how you make it to your 18th birthday and have no idea that you're colorblind. But he also wants to be an aviator, but he won't speak. And they never exactly explain why. He's taking a vow of silence. Yes, that's what he's doing. Why is he taking... What's he protesting? And how far away from military academy could this guy be? Could you imagine this guy showing up his first day? Hey, young cadet, what's your name? Jesus Christ, this movie was so fucked up and so wrong on so many fucking... They got every character wrong on this movie.
That is an amazing turnaround for me. I had no strong opinions on this picture.
Well, the notion that this guy wanted to be a Marine pilot or a Navy pilot... And he wouldn't talk, and he was goth and skinny and weird. Like, those guys are in ROTC, and they have crew cuts, and they're doing push-ups. Like, what?
He doesn't really respect authority.
Whoever wrote this fucking film, fuck them. That's such a piece of shit. All right, but of course the Academy's like, ah! We love it. Fuck this.
I don't know if I've ever seen you.
They ruined our society. They've ruined our society. We're now here because of them. This marked the beginning.
Okay. For those of you new to the program, the movie is 2006's Little Miss Sunshine.
Oh, the guy also wrote Star Wars: The Force Awakens.
Oh no,
is that bizarre. A bad one?
I didn't care for it.
What did they have?
Strange, at least.
They have a mute character in there. Get the Millennium Falcon.
The guy wrote some movies.
The guy wrote a lot of movies.
Toy Story 3, Hunger Games, Catching Fire, Inside Out.
Again, range, if nothing else.
All right.
Little Miss Sunshine. Blah. All right. Well, we all know the critics love this because they're horrible and they can be baited into liking shitty movies because they have strong whatever themes or whatever.
If it's called Fox Searchlight, that's a guaranteed nomination.
Right. All right. I hate to do this.
No, this has to be horrible for you.
Well, we're talking about this with Alan. Yep. This is not an endorsement of this movie.
This is like betting against your team.
That's right. 93.
Oh, my God. I'm up there. I couldn't go as high as Adam went. I settled for 88.
I also have 93. I'll knock it down. I'll bump it up to a 94.
That's illegal.
You're locked in here, 93. Ken Jennings.
Oh, 93? Yes. Okay. 93 it is.
Little Miss Sunshine, also known as Patient Zero, is certified fresh at 91.
And they all have it even. The audience agrees.
Yeah. There's so many holes in this, really.
The Alan Arkin, Peter Falk comedy gem, the funniest movie of all time in my book, The In-Laws. Now, that's worthwhile. And also
Serpentine, Shelley. Serpentine.
Also has one of the great awkward meal.
That's right.
Sit when they meet each other for the first time.
Well, this is definitely a Lifetime Achievement Award for Al.
Right.
But he got, Arkin got this because of the Lifetime Achievement, not because of this movie. But here we go.
I thought by the movie I thought might come up that I watched last night, Brokeback Mountain. That has a great Thanksgiving or early 80s Thanksgiving when the father-in-law of I can't think of
Heath?
Well, who cares?
The other one?
Not Heath.
Gyllenhaal?
Gyllenhaal. Jeez Louise. When he's like, sit down, you old SOB, because he keeps putting the TV on so the boy can watch football. Man, that movie's the best. That's the saddest music in movie
history. Like,
I've never
gonna...
Never seen it. You think it'd be right in my wheelhouse.
I was going to watch that. But then I had this conversation with TJ Hooker where I said, I can't quit you. Sorry.
Oh, it's such a picture.
Dave Damashek.
Oh, no.
Came out strong. Played a game. Played a good game. 44.
Oh.
44 for you.
That's solid. That's a solid score.
I'm not proud.
Solid score.
Leaving Gina Grad
yeah.
and Adam Carolla. Whew. Not going to announce your score yet, Ace, but I want to tell you, you are the winner.
Mm-mm.
Of the Ace Award for Rant of the Year.
That's right.
Mm.
With that Little Miss Sunshine jag.
Thank you.
Gina Grad,
mm-hmm.
you beat Dave.
Mm.
35.
Okay.
You also beat Adam. 68. Mm. Ace, third place. I don't know how it happened. I felt that you were close in the game the whole way, but.
No.
I'll take it.
I'm very upset.
Congratulations,
not an exhibition
Gina.
Game. Thank you.
I'm telling you, this is when we began the decline.
Yeah.
Right here, right now. The war on dads. That's it. Kinnear was a great dad. He was all you'd want in a dad. And he was a buffoon this entire movie. And all everyone did. By the way, if I'm sitting in a fucking diner, I'd be like, fuck you. You pay for your own fucking meals, you fucking preening, smirking pricks. Fuck you. Tell my fucking daughter not to eat ice cream. And you're looking at me like, fuck off.
That's a great point. Then they also let him get the tab for the whole for the group of eight.
Yeah, fuck you. Hey, Mutie over there. Good luck at the Air Force Academy. Idiot. And then that puss throws a tantrum when he finds out.
Yeah,
he
goes apeshit.
They got to go talk him off
the ledge.
Reservoir
Dogs has a great diner scene that opens things. Five Easy Pieces.
Let me just hit Simply Safe. No one should feel unsafe at home, and that's why you got to get Simply Safe. Protect yourself with Simply Safe. SimplySafe.com/Adam. Let's take a quick break. We'll do the news right after this.
Get your tickets now for Adam Carolla is Unprepared for the Holidays. December 7th at Virginia Street Brewhouse in Reno. December 13th and 14th in Oxnard at Levity Live. In Milwaukee at the Pabst Theater on January 24th. And at Chicago's Park West on January 25th. Adam Carolla is Unprepared for the Holidays. Get your tickets now at AdamCarolla.com.